Good Monday morning to you, and welcome to a Political Perspectives on WFSU, also Facebook Live and Comcast Channel 4 for FSU. Now that the storm is out of the way, it's back to the political realities of the time. And thank you for joining us via all of our multiple platforms here. I'm Tom Flanagan, and to all the folks who provided us with information over this long, long, can you believe it was just 1 week ago, we were looking down in the Gulf and we were saying there is something moving up our way, and that could not be a very good thing. And boy, that certainly turned out to be prescient, wasn't it? So hope you're well on the road to recovery, though. And we're going to talk about politics here on this version of Perspectives. And a reminder, you're always invited to be part of the conversation, wherever that might lead, via phone and email. 850-414-1234 is the phone number. Perspectives at WFSU.org if you have access to working email. You can also send us a tweet at WFSU Perspective. And program note, this will be telecast tonight at 7 Eastern Time on 4FSU Comcast Channel 4. In Leon, Gadsden, at least a small portion of Gadsden, they're trying, folks. Wakulla, Madison, Taylor, and Brooks counties, also live streaming on our WFSU Media Facebook page. And we invite you to hang around online after the live radio program goes off the air. We'll continue the discussion for a little bit longer on Facebook, and our entire program, including the extended conversation, will be archived on WFSU.org/perspectives. That done, let's meet the finalist candidates here for Tallahassee City Commission seat 4. That is the mayor's seat. We'll do it alphabetically. John Daly, who also now happens to be a county commissioner, joins us. Good to see you again, sir.
Tom, thanks for having us on.
Okay, and a former aide to the mayor of the city of Tallahassee, Dustin Daniels, is also back here. So,
hey, Tom, appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Well, let's start, guys, with all right. John, let's just say that you had the mayoral's position here through this storm. And not trying to second guess the current mayor, who is Andrew Gillum, but would you have done anything different? Are there any other priorities you would have assigned to city staff? Would you have done it just the way it happened? What?
Well, Tom, let me say this. First of all, thanks for having us on. We certainly appreciate it. Now is not the time to really start casting judgment. We are still under a state of emergency. And in fact, at noon today, we're going to extend the state of emergency locally for another 7 days. Now is the time to concentrate on getting people's power restored, getting the yard debris cleaned up, and getting us back to a normal routine. Like any storm event, after the storm hits, the city and the county and the school district will sit down. We'll talk about what worked well, what we can improve upon. We can always do things differently to improve upon. Nothing is perfect. Now's not the time to do that. But I do want to give a shout out to the city of Tallahassee, Leon County, and Leon County Schools for working really hard around the clock, 24/7, trying to get our community back in order. And, you know, a shout out to WFSU. Y'all are great partners. You embed down at the EOC. You keep the information stream going, and we certainly do appreciate that. But also to the first responders and the utility line crews, both with the city of Tallahassee on the mutual aid agreements that came into town to help. They're working literally 24 hours a day in shifts trying to get the power restored. And, you know, they've done a great job. We still got some work to do, and we're committed to making it happen. But, you know, there'll be time to do the storm assessment. We do it after all the storms. But I think that the city and the county and the school district have been working really hard to get us back to a normal routine.
Okay. Mr. Daniels, your take on it.
Yeah, no. Well, I appreciate the question. I'll first just say, you know, my heart goes out, obviously, to the communities that were devastated by Hurricane Michael, especially to the west of us. You know, obviously, we are still in the midst of our recovery here in Tallahassee, Leon. But obviously, you know, we were not as hit as bad as some communities. I think everybody knows that. And I think everybody feels blessed by that. But obviously, I'm so very proud as well of just seeing so many members of the community sort of step up and recognize that this isn't over, right? That so much of the sort of unfortunate realities of a storm like Michael come after the fact, right? This long after the storm is actually gone, and are actually stepping up and supplying supplies for, and other kinds of needed resources for our neighbors at the west. But one of the things that I've been talking a lot about is the fact that, you know, there are folks who are food insecure in our community on a regular basis, families who are now are going to in a really tight spot, who lost an entire refrigerator of food and lost a lot of resources and are likely not going to get the resources they need to replenish those things that they lost for the next couple of weeks. And so as much as we look to the West and we do everything we can for our neighbors, we have to look at the work that's still left to be done here in Tallahassee. And I think there are a number of agencies like the Salvation Army, the Red Cross, obviously the city and the county, everything that they've been doing, I think, has been absolutely spot on. I think that they have been communicating very well with folks to give them an expectation of when their power will get on, what resources are available to them, whether it be food, whether it be water, whether it be comfort stations. So I think that the job that has been done to this point has been very effective. But obviously, like was said, we're not done yet. We haven't totally passed where we need to be.
Well, you touch on something that has been an identified problem of major import in this community for quite a while. And it's not just our opinion. It's also Forbes magazine and a number of other sources that have analyzed it. And you just have this vast income disparity in Tallahassee-Leon County. Everyone from the upper echelon of folks who, you know, God bless them. We do not hate lobbyists, but some of these folks are incredibly well-heeled. And then you go off in some of these neighborhoods over here off of Levy Avenue and Basin Street and Joe Lewis and all of that. And it is almost a third world situation. Does city government, to your way of thinking, John, have any kind of a role in trying to address that issue? And how do you do it?
Well, I think it's not just the city or the county. I think it's a community issue. Everybody has a role to play. Everybody needs to step up to the table and do their part. There needs to be a plan in action to address all of our issues, from food deserts to food insecurity, financial insecurity. I think that everybody has a role to play.
And you do things like, increase the minimum wage, try to get more business and industry, especially when it comes to maybe not the requirement for heavy duty training and highly skilled workforces and that sort of thing in the community? And how do you affect that?
Yeah, I think that we've got great opportunity to expand our economic base. One of the things that I have been talking about is creating a JobWorks program based upon what we have done at Leon Works, in partnering up with the city and with the school board as well. But we've got a unique opportunity in the next 20 years, if you think about it. The city passed a sales tax extension, which is going towards infrastructure projects. Currently, we have got a workforce problem. If you talk to people that are in road construction, they will tell you that they have a hard time building their teams because people aren't properly trained on heavy equipment. And what I am proposing is that the city and the county and the school district go out and we partner together to create a training program using our equipment, using our people, using our land to physically train on, to be able to put people immediately to work. It's gained a lot of traction. I've had the opportunity to speak to the city manager about it. I've had the opportunity to talk to the county administrator about it. The school district out at Lively has the opportunity to create a certification program. And literally, in the next 3 to 4 months, we can have people trained in and back to work.
Okay, so, what would your approach be, Dustin?
I think that there's a huge role, quite frankly, for city government on this issue. And I think, from the very beginning of me getting in this race, it's one of the reasons why I got into this race in the first place is the fact that we do live in a lot of ways in a tale of two cities, where folks are on one side of the town, living in a very wealthy and cared for kind of environment. And then on the other side, you have people who are struggling to make ends meet on a daily basis. And so, one of the things that I've proposed is free community college, vocational and technical training. I've been called a communist and a socialist and a radical, mostly by allies of Commissioner Daley for that idea. But basically what I'm saying is there are local businesses that are saying we have jobs that we cannot fill because we can't find people who have the training that we need, right? And at the same time, you have people on other sides of town who say we can't find a job that pays a living wage that allows us to pay for the needs of our family. To me, I think workforce has always been the missing link. And I think that, what I always say to folks as a value statement is if we're okay using public dollars to subsidize the cost of a parking garage for a luxury hotel downtown, which we have done before, but we're not okay with using public dollars, federal dollars, regional workforce dollars, and local dollars to remove barriers for people to access education that then pipeline them to a good paying job that already exists today, then we just fundamentally disagree. I think that's a huge piece of the puzzle. But listen, I think that we also have to talk a lot about achieving equity in the way that public dollars are spent. I mean, if we did a 100-year analysis of how public dollars have been spent on roads and sidewalks and stormwater, it would be a very bleak picture because there have been certain areas of town that have been systemically neglected. Let's just call it what it is, right? We like to pretend that things like Jim Crow and the legacy of those policies just didn't happen in our community. And I think that we have to lean into those issues. I don't say those things to be provocative or to be divisive, but the reality is that to achieve equity means that there are certain areas of town that need more investment now than other areas of town. And lo and behold, these areas that I'm talking about are the same ones that you were just talking about. High crime, high poverty, low health indicators. You know, I think that the city can play an extremely transformational role if we prioritize these issues, not just beyond, again, these talking points that we're having in a political debate, but we make sure that these are exactly the metrics that are used to evaluate the job that our elected officials are doing on a yearly basis.
Okay, we're headed towards a break here, but we do have a couple minutes. And I want you to be thinking in terms of something that has been, I guess, one of the large points of controversy in the city of Tallahassee and to a degree Leon County, although Leon County is kind of backed out of it, which is the Community Redevelopment Authority and the money that is made available there through a through Florida statute. It was set up by the legislature, and the city of Tallahassee and Leon County embarked on a program of enhancing development in certain parts of the community in two ways, the downtown and then a split between the south side area and the Frenchtown area. And the rest, as they say, is history. We'll talk more about that coming up on this very special edition of Political Perspectives. The two finalists for Tallahassee City Commission seat four, the mayor's seat, John Daly and Dustin Daniels with us. And a program note, we will continue our Political Perspectives this week. We'll be going to seat three coming up tomorrow, and that will be made up of finalists who are Lisa Brown and Jeremy Matlow. And then the following day, we'll get to seat five. And that is Bob Lotain and Diane Williams Cox. You are always welcome to be part of the discussion here on Perspectives. And the lines are open. Hope your cell phone remains charged at 850-414-1234. If you have a question for our candidate contenders, give us a ring. And we'll be right back here on Political Perspectives. Welcome back to WFSU-FM, also our audience here via Facebook Live and the folks who are watching us on TV for FSU Comcast Channel 4, the two finalists for Tallahassee City Commission seat 4, the mayor's seat, John Daly and Dustin Daniels here with us, OCRA. I'm sure that there are other words we could apply to that acronym, but it has been a controversial thing. John Daly, as Leon County Commissioner, the county backed out of that whole deal as soon as it kind of became a political football and all. So if you became mayor, though, it would be back in your purview again going forward unless the city of Tallahassee commission decides, nope, we don't want it either. So number one, going forward, what do you do with that?
Well, let's look at the history there. You have two CRAs. You have downtown CRA, and then you have the Frenchtown Southside CRA. The county commission voted to pull out of the downtown CRA because we did not feel like that it continued to meet the needs as established by Florida statute in order to move forward. If anything, it does not have the blight that it did when the CRA was created. It was the appropriate move to do to sunset, and so the county commission moved in that position. I have not had a seat at the table for CRA in over 8 years, and I'm very much looking forward to being the mayor and having a seat back at the table. I think that the Frenchtown Southside CRA plays a very important role if we return back to basics and we get back to the original purpose of why CRAs are created. CRAs are created to reinvest into neighborhoods. Okay, you take the portion of the funds that are brought to the table because the CRA is created, and you reinvest in those neighborhoods. Infrastructure, okay, sidewalks, roads, sewer, facade improvements for residential housing. We can use the CRA in a proactive manner to be able to identify certain properties. If they should be on the historic registry, we should put them on the historic registry. If they need to be raised and we need to rebuild, we can do that. If there are structural issues associated with the properties, we can do that as well. There's a few small businesses as well that could really benefit. If you think of Ashmore's down on Brevard Street, there is money that in programs dedicated specifically to those type of program, to those buildings that we can utilize. But if we also remain creative, we can do amazing things with the neighborhood associations. For instance, the Bond Neighborhood Association, in conjunction with Tallahassee, City of Tallahassee Neighborhood Department, just rolled out phase one of an amazing redevelopment project down in the Bond community. I wholeheartedly support it. I think it's absolutely amazing. Hats off to the Neighborhood Department at City of Tallahassee. Hats off to the residents that live in Bond for coming together, creating that neighborhood, building the vision, and setting forth a plan. The reason why it's important is that CRAs offer you a dedicated revenue source outside of the general revenue to be able to accomplish some of those goals. And so I'm very excited. I look forward as mayor to fully supporting this initiative and being able to move forward. I think we could do amazing things in Frenchtown as well. The neighborhood of Frenchtown did come up with their neighborhood plan. It has not been fully activated by the city, and I look forward to bringing the political leadership to be able to do so.
Okay, Dustin Daniels, same type of deal, or do you have some additional ideas you'd like to bring to the table on that?
Yeah, no, I think, I agree with the premise that CRAs can be a very fundamental tool for creating economic opportunity. I think the one thing that I'll say is I'd like to just see, and I've said this before, just like the same philosophy that has been applied in the past for what we have defined as economic development. That same philosophy applied to everywhere in town, right? So what I mean by that is on Gaines Street, for instance, when we were using the CRA to basically subsidize the development of student housing, right? That was, quote, economic development. Everybody felt good about that. Now, you know, when we're having conversations about opportunities on the South Side and in Frenchtown, you have individuals who are saying things like, well, that's picking winners and losers, right? That's messing with the free market system. You know, why is it any different on, other sides of town than it was when we were, again, trying to invest in a blighted area like Gaines Street? For me, I think that going back to your original question, which was about inequality, I think CRAs can be very transformational in changing, again, the landscape and to promote economic development in those areas. But I also think that it has not realized its total potential on the affordable housing front. We have a very, very, almost a crisis, borderline crisis of affordable housing. We essentially have either student housing available or we have single family homes, right? And not a lot in between for workforce or for affordable housing folks. And so, I think that CRAs can play a very good role, an instrumental role in providing those opportunities through carrots, sticks, and other kind of innovative things, right? I mean, we can provide incentives for developers to include affordable housing units in the developments that they have. And also where we own land, right, or where we are instrumental to the deal, we can say, actually, we require affordable housing to be a part of the project, right? I just think that there are so many things that we could be thinking about that we haven't been. And again, as long as we prioritize areas that have been systemically neglected, I think that CRA, the really potential for it to create transformational change for people, especially on the South Side and in Frenchtown, has not yet been realized.
Before we depart that subject, let's go to the phones. By the way, our number 850-414-1234, and Dr. Ed joins us. Hey, Dr. Hollifield, how you doing, sir?
Oh, pretty good. How about you, Tom?
We weathered the storm. How about you and Liz?
Well, we didn't exactly get washed out, but we sort of dodged a bullet, and we're very thankful for that.
We are too, Dr. Ed. What can we do for you today?
Well, Tom, you know my position on the CRA, and I made that very clear in editorials and city commission meetings and county commission meetings. And the bottom line is this. Poverty has increased, and they aren't talking about poverty, really, to the extent that they need to. Poverty has increased under the CRA. poverty has increased under all these chamber and leadership Tallahassee initiatives. Poverty has increased under this Imagine Tallahassee scheme, because what we imagine is rich people getting even richer. And development is no benefit to the community if the benefits go to the top 1%. And unfortunately, that's exactly what has taken place in Tallahassee. There is no vetting of these projects in a meaningful way. You take Big Bang Cares. That was CRA money that went to a not-for-profit. How does the community benefit when there is no tax increment financing? We gain nothing from that. And example after example can be mentioned in which the money just goes to make rich people richer.
I'll tell you
and
what, Dr. Ed.
The bottom line of the CRA.
Well, let's give both of these folks a chance to respond on that, Dr. Ed, if we could here, as far as starting with you, Mr. Daly, again, what Dr. Ed brought up about the, at least in the past, where some of these CRA funds have been used for what he perceives as unworthy purposes because you don't get a return back on that investment to the degree perhaps that you should.
Well, Dr. Holifield, first of all, it's good to hear from you, and I'm glad that y'all are safe recovering from the storm. And he brings up some great points, Tom. Look, I think it's a philosophical approach as well, and this is one of the things that I want to change when I am mayor and I have a seat at the table, is that we need to turn the board more into a proactive board versus a reactive board. This is what I mean. So we have a situation where we've had some large companies that have been able to take advantage of some of the programs for the CRA. I don't blame them for doing that, but when we have large corporations that have enough staff in place whose job it is to identify state programs, local programs to help them bring their goals to fruition, they have the resources to dedicate. My approach to the CRA is just the opposite. We need to start with the infrastructure of the community first and foremost and help the local businesses. Now, these are individuals and these are small businesses that might not have the resources internally to go out and spend a half a day identifying all the programs that are available. It is our responsibility as elected officials to proactively go out and work with the communities to identify the projects that are going to truly help the community. Proactively moving out. We need to be working with our planning department. We need to be working with GIS. We need to use all the software tools that we have available. Let's go lot by lot, block by block. You have heard me say this on the campaign trail time and time and time again. Let's be the proactive force that goes into the neighborhood to work with the neighborhood instead of waiting for the projects to come to staff, which are then proposed before the commission itself. So I want to change the actual philosophy on how we approach these issues and approach these projects, and I want the CRA board to be more proactive in its approach instead of reactive, waiting for the projects to come for review.
Oh, okay, Dustin.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with the idea of being proactive. I think, you know, some folks have had, you know, 12 years or more to be proactive on the CRA and haven't had the opportunity to do that. What I will say is for Dr. Holifield, I agree with a lot of what he says and what he's saying now about the fact that even if it was intentional or unintentional, that the reality is that the return on investment for these projects has not necessarily benefited poor people. It hasn't benefited blighted areas in the way that we have thought that it might, right? And I think that we have to be honest about that. I would love to see a CRA that has way more accountability in terms of, again, establishing what that return on investment actually looks like for every single project that we actually invest in, right? And I think that that looks a little differently. I think that obviously investing in projects that increase the tax increment that we're able to collect so that we're able to invest in other places, I think that's one measurement of success. But I also think that there are other ways. I think that we should look at things like labor agreements, for instance, to make sure that when we have developers from out of town who are coming to work on projects, that those folks, where it makes sense, work with local labor, local architects, local vendors to basically allow for that wealth to actually stay local. I think that we also need to look at community benefit, you know, whether that's establishing healthcare in an area that didn't habit before, or provide some sort of, again, social service that didn't provide itself before. What I will say as well is I think that, you know, if you look at the kinds of services that we as a CRA and also the Office of Economic Vitality provide to out-of-town developers, you know, we provide them with a whole bunch of information for them to help make better decisions about their business. This is what the housing market looks like. This is what the retail market looks like. We don't do that for local businesses. And so what happens is you have these developments that are taking place where neighborhoods are not at the table, first of all, to actually have their voices heard. Then you have local businesses that are adjacent to these businesses that have no idea what's coming. They have no idea how to capitalize on the fact that the market is changing, that there could be more bodies in the area where they can actually make more money. Instead, they don't know any better, and so maybe they sell off their business or they just slowly go off into irrelevancy. And so I think that we need to provide the same sort of services that we provide for out-of-town developers when we're trying to attract them here, those kinds of services as well to local businesses so that they know the opportunities that are growing in our community and that they can take advantage of them to keep that wealth here in Tallahassee and to keep it local.
Okay. Along that same thing then, how do you leverage things like the Jim Moran Institute and the FAMU small business folks and all the resources that we have in this community to try to jumpstart more local businesses in those target areas? You can remember, both of you guys, when the Frenchtown area, it may have had a low income, but boy, it was just a seething hotbed of entrepreneurial sure. spirit. You had a lot of small businesses down there owned by the people in that area. Those have gone away. You go to Southside, same deal. How do you get that back again?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you just mentioned a couple of resources that we have, right? We have organizations that focus on helping entrepreneurs and small businesses do better or start up in the first place. I think that we need to fundamentally allow those folks to be a part of our development, our economic development strategy, not just something that happens and we celebrate every once in a while when it's startup week, but actually say that this is exactly how we create jobs by investing in their success. And then the other thing I'll say is, quite frankly, and it's something I worked on in the mayor's office, was making it easier for local and small businesses to do business with the public entities that exist in Tallahassee. What we know is that it's a lot, you know, in many cases, very difficult for these local businesses and entrepreneurs to get access to capital, right? I think that we can do some things to address that issue. But the one thing that we do have is a lot of purchasing power. City government, county government, school board, state government, FSU, FAMU, the list goes on and on. These are public entities that have huge budgets, budgets that could be spent more intentionally with local businesses. And I think that, you know, we talk a lot about this, you know, about prioritizing minority and women-owned businesses or minority and women-owned startups. But if you look at the process that it takes for those folks to actually do business with these public entities, it's a nightmare. It genuinely is. And quite frankly, you know, one of the things that we did away with, some of the policies we had in the city of Tallahassee when I was there, were policies I think that were erected, quite frankly, to prevent those kinds of businesses from doing business with the city. So I think that we need to come to the table as partners to basically say, this is how we grow jobs. Amazon is not coming to Tallahassee. Some of these larger corporations that we, you know, are wasting our time trying to attract, those folks are not coming. But we could develop local businesses to become the next juggernaut of Florida, the juggernaut of the Southeast and of the United States if we have a business retention and expansion program that invests in their needs and that helps them get along in the process.
Yeah, you know the times they are changing when Sears declares bankruptcy. But John Daly, what do you do to try to get more folks? Hey, you can have a business. You can be successful. You can serve your community, and we'll help you. How do you do that?
Well, I think that there are specific things that the city government can do. And let me give you a prime example from the county side. You know, people forgot that the Domey Station is actually located in a county facility. So we negotiated with the founders of the Domey Station, first and foremost, who brought us a great idea. And we looked at them and said, you know what? We believe in you, and we're going to establish you down by the railroad station at the old railroad depot. And we're going to give you our facility, okay? And on top of that, there's infrastructure needs as well. If we are going to truly help build a local business community, especially an entrepreneurial community, let's think long and hard about fiber optics. You know, one of the problems with Domey when it first started out is that we actually did not have fiber optics that were run specifically, physically to the space. And I made the motion at the county commission that we need to go ahead and completely fill out the infrastructure with fiber optics. So they got a dedicated line there up. I mean, if we're going to have an entrepreneurial community, we need to make sure that the proper infrastructure is there. So there are physical aspects to the infrastructure that we can do to help out the community. I do believe in the Minority Business and Women Enterprise that we have established. We do have standards on the local level so that when people are doing, whether it's construction or whatever it is, that we do have standards when it's with local money that we put in place, requiring them to use so much of our local business and so much of our minority-owned business and so much women-owned business targets as well. And maybe we need to take a hard look and strengthen it where it's appropriate and be able to move forward. But there is specific examples of where we have stepped up to the plate to help. There are ideas on how we can move forward, both with infrastructure, both with our purchasing power. And I do agree with Dustin that, look, you go to any community across the country and you're going to look and see one of the greatest barriers to starting a business or being an entrepreneurial and starting out in the first is access to capital. And so I think we need to get very creative on how we can work with the private industry, with the public industry, to help people overcome that access to capital issue.
Dr. Williams joins us here on Perspectives, and you can too, 850-414-1234, as we talk to the two finalist candidates for Tallahassee Mayor, that is City Commission Seat 4, John Daly and Dustin Daniels. Hey, Dr. Williams, thanks for calling.
Hey, good morning, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Yes, sir.
How's everything going, sir?
Hey, we survived and glad to hear you got through it, too.
Yes, sir, definitely got through it. And good morning as well to both the candidates.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Both John and Dustin Daniels, good morning.
Yes, sir, go right ahead, Doc.
So, Tom, of course, you know I do a lot in the community when it comes to our youth around the city of Tallahassee area. And realizing the potential that a lot of our youth have. And what I would like to know is, considering the major social issues we have plaguing our communities, such as crime, poverty, equal opportunity, how do we start to incorporate our inner city youth into programs and services that specifically target them and give them access to opportunities? And what I would like to hear in the responses from these candidates is I would really like to hear in-depth responses considering the past where we have had challenges with funding programs like Pomeroy Teen Center, and then also delays in starting councils that may benefit our youth as well.
Okay, Doctor, I'll tell you what. We'll give them a moment to fuminate over those questions here as we take a quick break here on our political perspectives and then back to talk about youth issues, particularly young people in the inner city. You can join the conversation at 850-414-1234, or you can send us an email, perspectives@wfsu.org. We'll be right back. So many issues facing Florida's capital city, and two gentlemen who would like to solve, if not all of them, at least a whole bunch of them, are sitting here in our studios here at WFSU Public Media. John Daly and Dustin Daniels, both running for the office of mayor of the city of Tallahassee. We just heard from Dr. Williams about social issues relating to young people. And let's reverse the order here. Dustin Daniels, you were involved in the mayor's office, a lot of initiatives there. But beyond that, what else can we do?
Yeah, no, I'll just say, first of all, that I appreciate the question because it's deeply personal to me. You know, I talk a lot about my background and sort of my trajectory to getting to this point. And I became a juvenile criminal offender by the age of 12. So I know all too well the pitfalls that face young people when they feel like they have no access to opportunity of any kind, when they don't have access to mentoring, when they don't have access to, you know, sort of a vision of what a better life for themselves and their families could look like. And so, you know, obviously I support a lot of an expansion of some of the programs that we've initiated in the mayor's office, like the Tallahassee Future Leaders Academy, which is a program, quite frankly, when we got started, we were basically putting together with rubber bands and chewing gum and has, you know, now become a national model for how you engage opportunity youth in inner cities. But I also think that we have got to have a really serious conversation about youth diversion programs, especially on the juvenile criminal offender side. You know, we have a program that was mentioned called Palmer Monroe Teen Center, the Palmer Monroe Teen Center called Community Connect. Institutions that has sported a 90% success rate, meaning when they have kids that come through their doors who have committed a crime, that they don't go on to recidivate within 3 years 90% of the time. That's unbelievable, right? And right now it only exists at one center. I think it services about 30 to 40 kids per cohort. I think that that is a transformational program, but it needs to be supported in a way that a transformational program should be supported so that we can serve more kids. And the last thing I'll just say is, you know, I have a history of investing in opportunities, whether it be workforce or employment training, for folks to get folks an opportunity to, again, see themselves in a different light, whether that be Iowa Avenue Code Academy, again, that is pipelining young people to coding jobs and jobs in the technology sector. But the last thing I really think that we need to emphasize here is, look, we have a number of places where local nonprofits can go to receive resources. I think that's great, right? Our human service funding, we've increased it by $800,000 over the last 4 years. But the reality is, so often those funding programs kind of neglect or really leave out a number of micro programs. You know, I think of things like the Omega Lamplighters, right? Or the Distinguished Young Gentlemen's Program. This is a micro mentoring program that focuses on investing and building up young men in our community that, because they don't have multi-million dollar budgets or large staffs or years on years on years on tax returns, they usually are kept out of the process. I think that we need to make it easier for folks to access dollars where, you know, even a small amount of funding for those kinds of organizations would go a really long way, but invest in their success, because quite frankly, they're doing it alone and they're having unbelievable success. They could be transferring that success to more people if they had a city government and a mayor that continually invested in their success as well.
Okay, and John Daly, is that it? You just have a whole bunch of programs and the city can pump more money into that and maybe a little bit of you guys are doing a great job and let it go, or what else can you do?
Well, I think one of the barriers that we're finding in our community right now is not necessarily the support for the recreation centers and the community centers, but maybe we should have a paradigm shift on how we approach this, and we need to take these programmings out into the neighborhood instead of waiting on people to come to the centers as well. I mean, yes, we have a rich tradition on the county side as well, out in the unincorporated area. You look at the partnership that we have created between the Miccosukee Community Center and the Boys and Girls Club, and we partnered up with Leon County Schools that has bus access as well, and it's been very successful. But is it truly serving all of the needs, especially when we get back into the city limits and making sure that we are addressing everything that we need to do? Now, if you look at the Leon Works program that we created, this is a nationally award-winning program. We have people from all over the country that are contacting Leon County to get more information about it, where we are proactively going into the schools and trying to expose students to the trades and making sure that we can spark an interest where it's appropriate and get people into possible careers as they move forward. And we've had tremendous success with it. So we should take a balance between not only exposing our teens to incredible work opportunities as they move forward, but combining that also with what we would traditionally think as, you know, our recreational opportunities and other opportunities that are offered at the teen centers as well.
Myesha joins us here on line one. And welcome, Ms. Mitchell. How are you? Did you make it through the storm okay, Myesha?
Oh, I certainly did, but my God, we're just getting a lot of power back over in Good Bread, and we're so happy to thank you guys for that. Great effort. I just want to make a couple of comments, though, in terms of what I experienced this last 6 days working over here with the Florida People's Advocacy Center in Frenchtown, along with the Tallahassee Food Network and the Greater Frenchtown Revitalization Council. We've been providing food distribution and water for the past 6 days. And one of the things we found is a big issue is transportation.
Right.
So we've gotten a lot of people who come into the area with trucks from as far as Jacksonville, Tampa, Orlando, and Atlanta, bringing food and resources, generators, and things of sort that we've helped to distribute not only in Leon, but in Bay and Jackson and then all those places surrounding us, and especially Gaston. They've been hit very hard. So when we're thinking about long-term planning, that needs to be local on-the-ground transportation, a key component of that. So other things you've talked about, just a quick thing. I want to mention several things that has that have been in my mind. And one has been this whole local infrastructure and business. I think you all talked about that already. But just further thought on how that works, because we've been experiencing a lot of not out-of-town people who come in and do the consulting, but they come to us to ask us the questions, and they develop the report and take it to whoever it is that pays them for it. And then we end up not still having anything left in our community. So we're trying to get more things like that. And you mentioned that, localized. How do you make sure that people in our communities who have the skills and the capacity to do just what you're paying other people to do have that opportunity as well? And then for the investors, the same kind of thing. Used to be that investors would come and that they had a standard where so many people from the community would be able to get jobs and be hired and be part of the development. Now the developers come with all the people that they need, and they leave us with nothing there. And also, again, people are not giving back to the community. The last thing is this: where is the formula? Where is in the CRA and all the things you talked about and the development of the community infrastructure, et cetera? Where is that formula? What's the human capital component of that formula? Which I thought initially the CRA was designed to provide that human capital support. Mm-hmm. There's no place for the people in the formula. So it's basically brick and mortar, and I'm concerned about that. So let's talk about sustainability. I love the ideas about the programming, but how do we get these things to be sustained enough that we are engaging people at the local level and building their capacity so that they can begin to do things like you talked about, long-range sustainable activities?
Great points all, Myesha. We'll turn it over to our panel and see how we go, starting with you, Mr. Daly.
Myesha, it is great to hear from you. You have been absolutely wonderful during the storm event, and I have enjoyed working with you. I'm glad to hear that Good Bread Hills is getting the power back on. I am still in day six without power at the Daly household, but we're making it. And they have done a tremendous job handing out food and feeding people. And, you know, we have partnered up. If you think about what we have done between the city and the county, we've handed out 750,000 half a million bottled waters. We've handed out 250,000 meals. But Myesha is right, and this is one of the things that came out during this storm event too, is transportation after the event itself and making sure that people have access to transportation so that they can get around. And that is something that we need to take a serious hard look at outside of the state of emergency, outside of this event. That is one thing that we need to take into consideration on how we could do better. And she nailed it right on the head. She touched on a lot of other issues. Let me see, Tom, if I can kind of go through and touch down on them. You know, when it comes to how we move our community forward, she is correct. So many times we have the consultants that come in. They'll have all of the charades. They'll sit down and they'll talk to the residents. They'll put together the plan, and then they leave. And so my philosophy is always we should start with the neighborhoods first. We should start with the people who live here, who know the community, that really know how to put the plan together and be able to move forward. It should start organically from the ground up. I think this is how it's worked with the Bond community just recently with the neighborhood plan that they just launched. And I think it's going to be a model for the community on how we can move forward. So my philosophy is to start in the neighborhood with the people and to be able to move forward from there, not with the outside developers as they're coming in who then sit down with the neighborhoods, but truly identify the needs of the neighborhood as we move forward with these neighborhood plans and being able to work together. Again, I think one of the problems that we're experiencing is that you get the out-of-town developers that come in. We do have the requirements to use local businesses. However, if there is not a workforce available for the local businesses to be able to fill, then they're going to move forward, and we have provisions, both the city and the county, to allow them to move forward. I'll give you a prime example. There's a great shortage of welders, plumbers, electricians, brick masons. We do have local ordinance, both at the city and the county, that require them to use local businesses. But if these individuals that perform these specific trades are not available, then they have to be able to move forward with outside workforce. So it starts with workforce, and it starts with investing in human capital. It starts with investing with people, helping them connect to the programs, whether it's out at TCC or whether it's out at the Lively Technical Center, and getting people employed. I know specifically out at Lively, the welding program, it's a one-year to career. That's what they call it. And so it's access to these programs and it's getting them involved.
Okay, Dustin. But you got all other kinds of things that you can pull into here. So what do you think?
Yeah, I'll just say, first of all, thank you, Myesha, for the call. It was great to be over at Florida PAC for a few days, organizing with you, taking some resources over to Oliver Hill this past week with Lakey and Cosby Hayes and some of those other folks. You guys are doing a great job. And I'll just say I absolutely agree with some of these, seeing people activate themselves in a way that has been beneficial for our community and seeing some of the barriers that they've seen. I think that that has to be a part of the conversation about how we alleviate some of that stuff going forward, because I think it's been incredible the number of people who have stepped up. I'll just say I completely agree on the workforce thing. I mean, that's one of the reasons why, again, I'm proposing that we provide local, federal, and regional dollars on the table to alleviate some of the issues. I mean, here's the thing. We can keep talking about workforce like we have been for the last couple of years. This issue hasn't gotten any better, right? It's not like we've just started to need stonemasons and electricians and plumbers. We've needed that for a very long time. And what's happening is people don't have access to these programs. There are great programs at TCC and at Lively, but people cannot access them. People cannot pay for the tuition. And there's sometimes that'll pay for some of the cost for them to go, maybe to subsidize some of it. But when you are a working person, when you're a working class person, it's very difficult for you to go to school while also working a full-time job that, by the way, doesn't pay you enough to make, provide enough food on the table for your family. So I think that we have to get rid of some of those barriers. And I think we do it again by making sure that we leverage things like Pell Grants, that we leverage things like workforce dollars at Career Source Capital Region. And then, yeah, absolutely. We have money at the CRA. We have money in the city's Capital Improvement Fund. And we have funding at Blueprint that allows for us to put it on the table to allow these folks to address these issues. And I'll just say, as it relates to spending local and growing from within, there's talking the talk and then there's walking the walk. Talk to local businesses. Literally walk into any construction firm, anybody who does business in Tallahassee, and ask them if out-of-town developers are being have their feet held to the fire as it relates to working with local labor on these projects. They're going to tell you it's a joke. They're going to tell you it hasn't happened. And they're going to tell you that they'd like to see that issue be addressed. And so, look, I'm not just for talking about things that are already on the books that say that we're supposed to spend local and create opportunities for local businesses and local labor. I'm saying that we literally need to put that in writing and that we need to follow up with these companies who are doing business with the city and that are relying again on public land and public subsidies, that if they are not doing what they say they're doing in terms of finding local talent, then that's something that we need to address right away. We need to hold their feet to the fire, because I'm telling you right now, ask any business that does business in the city of Tallahassee, it just hasn't been happening.
A quick program note, we're going to continue this discussion for just a few minutes after the top of the hour, after we go off on the radio side here on Facebook Live, and we will be discussing the other side of the equation. We've been talking about how to spend money. Now we're going to talk a little bit about where that money should come from and what the city of Tallahassee can do to ensure that there is adequate revenue for all of the things we've been talking about today. But just if I could give each of you just about a minute or so, talk about your top three priorities. You get into the mayor's seat, Dustin. It's all yours. What's the first three things you're going
to
do?
Absolutely. I mean, for me, it's to promote innovation by bringing our university partners to the table to invest locally and to invest locally in entrepreneurs. It is to focus on criminal justice reform, both diversion program and reentry program, looking at giving an opportunity to people who've made a mistake, paid their debt to society, and are just trying to make a way for themselves and their families. And then I'll say it's economic inequality. It is about leaning into the challenge of the fact that there is still a very odious legacy of Jim Crow that we have not been honest about in the city of Tallahassee and in Leon County. And that one way that we move the needle on that issue is just by achieving equity in the way the public dollars are spent, and that we make sure that neighborhoods and areas that have been systemically neglected are lifted up and are brought up, are caught up, if you will, with the rest of the city.
Okay, John Daly, your top three.
Top three would be, number one, creating that vision and being laser focused on where we're going through a strategic plan that has not been created at City of Tallahassee. Number two, restoring public trust in City Hall and bringing the community back together, making them more active in their city government and being able to move us together forward. And finally, economic expansions and economic opportunity. That ties in with our law enforcement. That ties in with our crime rate. That ties in with our poverty. It ties all of these other issues together through economic expansion.
It is certainly going to be a different equation at City Hall, though, no matter what happens on November 6th, because we are going to have three totally different city commissioners, including the mayor. We don't know what's going to happen with current mayor Andrew Gillum. whether he moves on into the governor's mansion, whether he finds out something else that he wants to do, should he not be successful in that regard. And it's going to be an opportunity, folks, for everyone to get more involved, perhaps, in local government than they had heretofore, because there is essentially going to be three new sheriffs in town when it comes to Tallahassee City Hall. And we suspect that that's going to be a lot of interesting conversation that will be going on as that paradigm shifts, regardless of who gets into these positions. We invite you right now to hang around for Facebook Live. We will continue our conversation with John Daly and Dustin Daniels, both the finalist candidates for Tallahassee City Commission Seat 4, which is the mayor's seat. And we also invite our viewing audience here to watch this program on 4FSU Comcast Channel 4 multiple times between now and the November 6th election, which is rapidly bearing down on us. We understand that the ballots are going to be going out. We're going to have early voting. A lot of opportunities for people to get involved in the entire process. Perspectives produced by WFSU in Tallahassee. Technical assistance by Taylor Cox today and Lydell Rawls on all of our interconnects. And I'm Tom Flanagan, providing video support for 4FSU from the TV side of the building. Suzanne Smith, Houston Brannon, Brandy Staney, Robbie Gaffney, Paul Dam, and John Manson Hing for Facebook Live and WFSU.org. Our producer in chief is Tricia Moynihan. Tomorrow we talk with the two finalists for Tallahassee City Commission Seat 3, Lisa Brown and Jeremy Matlow. We'll reconnect then right here on Political Perspectives.
Copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.
This is our bonus conversation on the mayor's race here on Political Perspectives as we continue on Facebook Live. And hi, Facebookers. It is so good to have you guys at the other end of the cyber connection here as we continue our conversation with the two finalists for Tallahassee City Commission Seat 4, the mayor's seat, John Daly and Dustin Daniels. And thanks again, guys, for coming in. We know in the recovery phase of the storm, it's been rough for everyone, and for you folks to come in and just say, hey, we want to talk public policy and look ahead, that is just wonderful. If Rebecca's still on the line, we can get her to hang on and join us in just a moment, because she has a really good point that we wanted to get to as well. But in the radio portion of the program, we were talking about all the different needs of the community and plans for the future. How do you enhance growth and development and juvenile issues and reduce crime and all that? All costs money. Where does the money come from? And without raising taxes, without boosting too significantly city utility rates, all that kind of thing. That's where the money comes from. John Daly, let's start with you. How do you do that?
Well, I think it's a combination of several things. You know, Tom, for 12 years that I've been on the county commission, I think we've got an incredible track record. If you think about the year that I got elected to the county commission, our budget was roughly $290 million. And 12 years later, the budget that we passed is roughly $260 million. Yet we've been able to expand our services. We've been able to open new parks. We've been able to do amazing things, build new branch libraries. So I think it's being responsible with the public dollars that we have and making sure that we stay on track, being able to move forward. We did all that, by the way, by only adjusting the millage rate one time, and that was when we went to the rollback rate during the recession. So I'm really proud of the work that that we've been able to do, myself and my six colleagues, and working with the administrator and being able to bring on new services and new great amenities to the community, but at the same time, actually being able to shrink the overall budget at the county. So when we move forward and we look at what's going on at the city, I think several things that we need to do. Number one, we need to do a complete assessment of the millage rate, make sure that we are on track and that the millage rate is appropriate for the services that we're providing. We also should probably do a complete audit on every fee that we are providing for every service that we're providing, not in a punitive manner whatsoever. Let's just make sure we're on track. Let's make sure that we're covering our bases. We're not generating too much revenue, but at the same time, we're generating enough to be able to cover the fees associated with those particular services, understanding that some things do not pay for itself. That's part of the overall budget plan as well. I think that we need to take a hard look at our interdepartmental cost, what one department charges another department for the services. This is all within the city and within the budget itself. And then finally, if we're truly going to look at expanding the general revenue of the city, it starts with economic expansion as well. We need to attract new businesses to our community while at the same time helping our local businesses grow. As property values increase, that is one way, obviously, that a city through the millage rate can bring in new business. For instance, if you have raw land, it's not at its highest and best use. If we can aggressively bring in new industry through through ways of recruitment, obviously, that is going to bring in new revenue to the general revenue budget. And I think it's important for us to truly sit down, create a plan, and be able to bring new businesses to our town while we are also sustaining the local businesses that we have here and helping them grow too.
Okay, shuffling things around, but Dustin, anything else beyond that? That sounds like pretty common sense.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I agree with a lot of what has been said. I also agree with the idea. I mean, I don't think we need new taxes for the things I'm talking about, right? When I talk about free community college and these kinds of programs, I don't think we need new taxes. I think the revenue's there. I think the one thing that I'll add is that it's an issue of priorities, right? I mean, just like anybody who has a budget at home, they prioritize a certain amount of money for, you know, going out to eat versus groceries versus the light bill versus the car payment, right? And so for me, I think that we have opportunities both at, again, the city's budget on the capital improvement side. I think the CRA, I think the $800+ million that we're going to have from Blueprint, I think that it all comes down to the priorities that we want to maintain, right? And I certainly have been very outspoken about what my priorities would be if given the opportunity to be mayor. And the last thing I'll just say is I think that we hopefully will usher in a new era of state cooperation. You know, one of the things that people don't think about is the fact that our state government, which we are very thankful for because of all the state jobs that it provides, doesn't pay any millage, doesn't pay taxes on the land, right? Because it's government. I think that we've had some very kind of fruitful conversations in the past with Republican leadership about the fact that, you know, we really could use some partnerships, whether it be for our airport or whether it be for some of the other public services that we provide because of the fact that they don't pay taxes. And it hasn't always gone to the most productive place. I mean, they're usually very, very receptive, but we really haven't had an advocate that understands or is willing to step up to the plate on that issue. I think Andrew Gillum will be our next governor. Obviously, my relationship with him, I think, will bode well for us prioritizing this community as it relates to having state partners at the table who can provide some revenue to address issues that, quite frankly, we haven't been able to address ourselves.
Okay, Rebecca joins us here. And thank you, Rebecca, for hanging on into our Facebook Live presentation here. Did you survive the storm okay? Hello, Rebecca.
Oh, hi. Hi, yes, I did.
You got power back and everything?
No power back, no.
Hang in there. Hang in there, Rebecca.
Help's on the way.
It'll come. Rebecca, what's your question for our candidates here?
So I haven't heard the candidates talk about ethics reform, and I was curious. I am curious about that. There was the thing about the grand jury that said that city officials are able to spend money without any internal audits or regulations, and I'm curious to hear the candidates' plans for fixing that problem.
All righty, let's go around the table here. John Daly, what do you think?
Well, first and foremost, one of the things that I would like to see is have the elected officials at the city of Tallahassee fill out the same financial disclosure forms that an elected official who is a county or a school board member or a state officer has to fill. So for the past 12 years, my financial disclosure form on an annual basis, I have to list down to the penny, every penny of revenue, where it comes from, what my debts are, mortgages, you know, when I first got elected, student loans, all of that. City officials don't have to do that. City officials fill out in ranges. I have between $0 and $225,000 worth of assets, or last year I made between $0 and $225,000 as income, but you don't have to disclose where it came from. I think that in today's day and age in the city of Tallahassee, for total transparency, one of the first things that we need to do is that we need to usher in the new financial disclosure forms. And I give Michelle Ray Winkle-Vasalinda credit for making that an issue during this campaign. It was a great one that she brought up. I agree with her. We've had to fill out the same forms. And so that's one thing that I'm going to bring to the table. When we talk about the purchasing power of anywhere in the city of Tallahassee versus the county, I also agree that we need to put extra steps and extra measures in place to make sure that there are additional eyes on all purchases that take place through the procurement process. I think that we should probably audit the procurement process just to make sure, again, not from a punitive standpoint, but just to make sure that right now when we start off day one, we're all on the same page. We know exactly how the process works. We know how many people have eyes on those purchases as we move forward. And I think with that type of transparency, everybody will be in place. If you think about the county, Tom, so when we purchase something, say, in the county commission offices, not only do we have several people within the county administrator's office that take a look at it, but also for larger purchases, you know, the clerk of the court, people forget, also serves the financial arm of the county. And so you have a separate constitutional officer that does not report to the county commission or to the administration that also has eyes on those same purchases as well. I think that brings a lot of comfort to people knowing that you have that kind of system in place for procurement, and it's something that we should take a look at, not necessarily the clerk of the court, but how do we strengthen the procurement process to make sure that we have full transparency and be able to move forward. So that was kind of a two-part question. Number one was financial disclosure specifically for electeds and how they report on an annual basis, but also dealing specifically with the procurement process. That was a great question, Rebecca. Thank you.
Okay. And Dustin, I was thinking that some of the suspicions surrounding county government over the past couple of years have been related to these very amorphic kind of things like, well, you know, did so-and-so make any kind of extra money off of this side deal? But there's no specificity to those allegations, and that seems kind of frustrating, certainly, when you look at it there. Sure. So would full disclosure like that be a good starting point, or what else could we do, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think that that's – I've always supported that idea of financial disclosures. I mean, I think that, look, this is a concerning issue, the things that, you know, that have been talked about. Obviously, we're learning more as in the course of this investigation. But what I will say is I don't know that it's rocket science, right? I mean, you have essentially interests, incumbent interests that are trying to influence the decision makers who are elected to public office. I put forward a very comprehensive set of policies that I think will address that issue, to include things like banning contributions from city and county vendors for candidates for local office, banning individuals who formerly served as elected officials from lobbying before city or county government, penalties for unregistered interests, right? When you have a lobbyist or somebody who is representing a certain interest in our community but does not register as a lobbyist and the issue that they're actually representing with the city government, that there should be harsh penalties for that, right? That you're not actually keeping the public in the dark for what the things that you're trying to advocate for. And I also think, you know, and I've said this before, I mean, you know, I think that there's a lot of growth that can take place with the local ethics commission, but I would love to see the ethics commission actually have purview over the county as well. I mean, you know, it's interesting to hear a number of folks at the county talk about the changes that they'd like to see at the city level, but they actually have no independent ethics council that looks at the things that they're doing. They don't have an independent ethics officer that looks at the things that they're doing. So, I mean, obviously, if we want local government transparency, we should have local government transparency, and that should include all elected officials at the local level, certainly at the city and county, because they're dealing with the same kind of interests that, again, are trying to influence their decision-making. And again, I think if we do those things, that we will get interest out of the process, and we'll make sure that people have a seat at the table for the elected officials that they elect to represent their interests in City Hall.
I'd even heard one suggestion, taking it totally out of city and county and even school board arena, having, like you have a state commission on ethics, having a local government commission on ethics, perhaps run through, you know, someone from FAMU and FSU and even TCC and, you know, academic types saying, oh, all right, we are very versed in the academic side of ethics, and we will form like a I don't want to call it a court. It certainly wouldn't be that, but at least a panel who could look at some of these decisions and say, hey, we're not connected to any of this stuff. And we might be able to provide some guidance, if nothing else. There'd be no punitive type of mechanism, but it just, hey, guys, watch it. This is not looking good on these things. Any traction there with either one of you? Or?
Well, let me first state that was not a completely accurate statement, because when it comes to financial procurement, we have a separate constitutional officer at the county that does look at every single purchase that comes through. That's important because you do not have that on the municipal level. And let's also remember the history here, Tom. The citizens of Tallahassee specifically came to the city of Tallahassee during the charter review process saying, we need this for the city, okay? We rely in a very proactive manner with the State Ethics Commission and work very well with them. In fact, I am very proud that the county attorney is one of the experts in ethics law and actually teaches ethics laws all across the state of Florida for elected officials. We've got a wonderful relationship with the state ethics. Our procurement policy follows through a separate constitutional officer. It's by the nature of how the governments are built differently, where the city does not have that function of the constitutional officers on the municipal level, where we do have that on the county level as well. So I think we have to understand and recognize the difference first and foremost, being able to move forward. But of course, anytime we have the opportunity to bring in additional academic experts or anything to help out, yeah, I'll be wide open to it.
Yeah, would that work?
I think that makes total sense. And I'll just say, you know, that to speak about the history, you know, there was a local coalition of individuals who fought really hard for a ballot initiative that was ultimately passed by the citizens. I would love to hear their perspective on whether or not they think all issues on the county side are actually being accounted for. I bet you that they tell you that they would love to have an ethics commission that whose purview actually is over the county as well. But absolutely, I think to the extent that we can leverage learning opportunities, not only just from what we're experiencing locally, but also what other communities around the country are doing, which a center like the one you're describing, I think, could do. I think it'd be fantastic.
Can you learn from folks like Erwin Jackson?
Sure.
I mean, he's just a perennial gadfly. But you know, anyone who sits in local government, you have people. I remember Jim Fair. I remember. Oh right. My gosh! You know, King Love. Oh good Lord! You
Mr.
have
all Danaher.
This.
Mr. Danaher.
Yeah, Eugene Danaher. Absolutely. Yeah, who Danaher would come and be just perennial? Oh, they would get in the face of local officials, would drive them crazy. But at the same time, there was always a little nugget of reality in there somewhere. Do you bring them into the process and say, hey, what do you guys think? Instead of, you know, throwing rocks from outside the castle walls here and bring them into the process and say, well, you know, or Dr. Ed or whomever, what do you guys think?
I embrace it, Tom, and let me tell you why. Because number one, this is our city and it's our government, and everybody has a seat at the table. Everybody should have an opportunity to participate. And let's not forget, and this is very important to me, your First Amendment rights. People, when we think about our First Amendment rights, we always think of freedom of speech, you know, gather, religion, freedom of the press. People forget the fifth element of the First Amendment, which is you have a constitutional right to petition your government when you are upset with what's going on. It is a part of the foundation of who we are, and I embrace that. I think that everybody, if you have a gripe, whether you like what's going on, you have a seat at the table to make it better. That's why one of the first things I want to do as mayor is, you know, we got the policy of the city that limits public speaking to up to 30 minutes. Of course, the mayor has the opportunity to waive that if they'd like to. But I don't think that that should be a decision that should be made in place. We should waive that policy. If you show up to the city commission meeting and you would like to speak, you should have the opportunity to speak. Now, I think that we should demand civility. Everybody should act in an appropriate manner. So that we can have these conversations. And I'm very proud that when we had the gun show loophole, we had about, 4 hours of public testimony. And I'll never forget the gentleman that testified at the very end, who was very much against us moving forward with the gun show loophole. But he opened his comments by saying, you know what, I can't tell you how proud I am of this community and how impressed I am with this discussion. It was a civil discussion. We disagree on this issue, but we have come together to exercise our right, and we certainly appreciate that. We've got a track record at the county of opening up the doors, inviting people to the table. Whether you agree or vehemently disagree with what's going on, it is important. You have a constitutional right, and as the mayor, I will uphold that right, and I will aggressively include people at the table that want to make our community better.
Sure can make for some long meetings. So, and Dustin, could you, you know, like when Steve Stewart shows up and just say, he has been, you know, pretty heavy duty on your former boss guy there, Mr. Gillum, and just say, okay, Steve, you may have a good point there. Let's sit down and talk about that.
Listen, I agree that every person has the opportunity or should have the opportunity to participate in their government. Now, I will say I think that, you know, Commissioner Daley may feel, you know, some love for those guys because he enjoys their support, but I don't, and that's okay. But what I'll say is I think that that's where intentions matter, right? When I say that you should have the opportunity to participate in your government, you absolutely should. But also, that doesn't mean that you're entitled to your own facts. That doesn't mean that you're entitled to your own political games that you want to play, and that you're not entitled necessarily to attack people in their family or personally or otherwise. And I think that that's unfortunately what we've seen from many of the folks that you've just listed by name. I think that there's no place for that, unfortunately, in public discourse. Obviously, we can't, you know, silence them. They can do whatever they want. But I do think that what happens is we give those folks legitimacy when we pretend like, okay, well, the things they're saying, you know, there's maybe a nugget of truth. Maybe there is once in a blue moon, but the majority of the time, those folks have some sort of political agenda that they're trying to advance. And so I think we need to be sober to that point. But yeah, I mean, I completely agree that every person who has an idea about the way that their government should operate, whether I agree with it or disagree with it, should absolutely have a fundamental right to bring that issue to the forefront. And as mayor, listen, you represent everybody. You don't just represent the people that you agree with, right? And I completely agree with that. But I also think that we should have a mayor that stands firmly in their beliefs and their values. And so I think what we're starting to get in these last final weeks here of this campaign is a real contrast. You know, you're very clear about what you get with a Dustin Daniels administration. Hopefully it's clear what you get or not with a Commissioner Daley administration. But, you know, those things are for me, I think that those are the things that people should make decisions off of, not based on whether they're going to get kicked out of City Hall if somebody wins or loses, because that shouldn't be a part of the conversation at all.
Okay, well, you mentioned him, so you get a chance to respond. Okay.
I will be the grown-up in the room. Let's move on. I know you got a lot of great
questions.
Okay,
I've only got one more because you guys have been very gracious with your time here going over time. And we'll go back to there. Would you change the job? Because some of your primary opponents said, no, we're going to just do away with it, make it a ceremonial thing, just like chair of the Leon County Commission.
Sure.
We're going to rotate it through. There are some other folks that said, no, we need to do like a Bob Buckhorn or Orlando. We need a strong mayor in there to kind of tamp down the oversight of the city manager. Would you change it? Keep it the same? What, John?
I would keep it the same right now. I think for the size city that we have, a council management form of government with a directly elected mayor fits well, and I'll tell you why. In contrast to the county commission, which you just mentioned, which is truly a ceremonial that rotates on a yearly basis, I am in favor of having a directly elected mayor for continuity. That means that you have one person that's going to serve in that position for 4 years. It builds continuity not only in the actual running of the meeting, but also continuity working in conjunction with the other city commissioners in a positive coalition and with the city manager to be able to identify those long-term goals, to be able to set that strategic plan, be able to create that vision, and quite frankly, create that environment that brings this community back together to be able to move us forward. Continuity is important. So I support the council management form of government with a directly elected mayor.
Okay, and you get the last word, Dustin. Same, ramp it up, tamp it down.
Yeah, I think at this moment, I think we should keep it the same. Absolutely, we shouldn't ramp it down. But I will say, I think that I'd be interested in having a community conversation about whether or not our city government is in its current form is meeting the needs of everyday working people. You know, I think that you get some good things with a council management form of government. I think you get some good things with a strong mayor form of government, right? Whether that's 10 years from now or 4 years from now, I do think that it is important that people constantly look at the way that we're doing things. Because look, I mean, there are other grown-up cities like Pensacola and like Tampa, like Orlando, that have a different form of government that we do, right? Can we get in front of some of the issues that those cities and those communities have had to deal with? Can we get in front of them if we have a different form of government where we can be more responsive to the needs, again, of everyday working people? So I'd be very open to that conversation.
Dustin Daniels, John Daley. One of these gentlemen will be the next mayor of the city of Tallahassee. And to our Facebook Live audience, thank you, folks. We will catch you tomorrow right here on Political Perspectives.